When you ever think about your experience of church, I don't know how long your experience of church goes on for. If it's anything like mine, I started coming to church when I was 8 years old because I was in Boys Brigade. And so, without telling you how old I am now, that's quite a long time. My experience of church has been varied. I started off here in Boys Brigade and moved on and became minister and had three pastoral churches and now I travel to different churches. So my church experience is probably very strange compared to some of yours. But my experience of church has been varied. Sometimes church has been like this. Do you remember when you were kids and you were on a trampoline? I don't know if that's part of your experience. You're on a trampoline and you fell down and everybody kept jumping around you and you couldn't get back up again. Sometimes church can be like that, but it shouldn't be so. Just try and scrabble it up and no one's there to give you a hand and pull you up. Let me tell you a story that is a part of my experience in this church that helped to shape the kind of minister I wanted to be and who I am now. Okay, so this is a true story. I've told this in a couple of churches and sometimes they go, really? Okay, but this is a true story. I was 14 years old, I was in Boys Brigade, I was in company section, out in the hall out there. And two men who were Boys Brigade officers at the time came to me. Because I don't know if you remember, those of you around when I was in church, that we used to have like a 20-mile sponsored walk. Do you remember that? And we walked up to Polesworth and Alvacut and Newton Regis and all over the place. You wouldn't be allowed to do it now. The police would just go absolutely ballistic, wouldn't they? But we did this 20 or 25-mile sponsored walk. Well, one year when I was 14, Bill Smith and Bob Goldborn, you probably know at least half of those names, came to me and said, we do another sponsored walk. Would you like to join us? And I said, it's not with the church, but it's with a rugby club and for a charity that we're involved in. Would you like to join us? You're old enough to do it now. And I kind of said yes before I knew what I was letting myself in for. They said, it's kind of a whole day. It's 40 miles. Now I'm 14 years old, and you know what 14-year-old teenagers are like, especially boys. They know everything. Okay, it's one of those things. I woke up one morning and realised that I knew everything and my parents knew nothing. That's when the trouble began. And I looked at Bill, who has played football most of his life and his knees were shot. That's about some of it, isn't it? And Bob, who even then, when I was 14 years old, looked like a white-haired old man. I don't know how old he was at that point, but he was just a white-haired old man in my eyes. And I thought, teenage arrogance, I'm going to end up carrying these two. And so the day came and we were meeting at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Bill picked me up from my parents' house. We drove down to Bob's house, who was still asleep, and we had to wait for him. He was the one who insisted we go up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And we went. And the idea of this walk was you did 5 8-mile laps. Yeah, my maths is okay. 5 8-mile laps. And it was great, you know. You did a lap, did 8 miles, got a bacon sandwich. I thought, I can do this. I could do this on bacon sandwiches. And then we did another. And it was into about the third lap that Bill starts hobbling a little bit. And by the halfway through the fourth lap, Bill's having to pull out because his knees are gone. And Bev comes along and drives him off into the distance, leaving me with Bob, the white-haired old man. And I'm thinking, this doesn't bode well. And already my legs are starting to cry out. We've gone past the mileage that my legs have normally walked on the 25-mile sponsored walk. We get to the end of the fourth lap and we have another bacon sandwich. We check our feet, off we go again. We're 3 miles into the last lap and my legs are screaming. You know how your body talks to you? It kind of complains. And so my legs are complaining and I can see that Bob is struggling a little bit, but we're still going and we're getting about 3 miles in and I don't want to carry on anymore. I'm really struggling, but I'm not going to admit it to Bob, the white-haired old man. No way. And Bob turns around to me and he said, Nick, he says, I'm really struggling here. He said, I don't know about you. He said, but we need to do something. And I think, great, we're going to quit. We're going to quit. We're going to go home. I can have a bath, whatever. And he went, I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to run. True story, this is true. He said, we need to run. I went, what? Are you crazy? He went, use different muscles when you're running, and you use your muscles in different ways. Therefore, it'll be like running on fresh legs. I said, it's the same feet. And do you know what he did? He then started to jog ahead of me. White-haired old man jogging ahead of a 40. And he turned around, he shouted, come on, young man, keep up with me. You know, if I could have found a rock, I would have thrown it at him. I really would. Rock, brick, anything. And he starts running ahead of me. White-haired old man. And he called, to me, and he went, come on, young man, run with me. Keep up with me. Don't quit. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be left alone in the middle of nowhere with aching legs and sore feet, and this crazy old man is running 35 miles into a sponsored walk, and he's running. So I started to jog. Well, I mean, when I say run. But we're running along, and every time I slowed down a bit, or every time I fell behind, he would turn around and shout, come on, young man, keep going. White-haired old man, encouraging me. And you know what we did? We ran the 5 miles. Well, when I say ran, it was kind of a weird-looking run, but, you know, white-haired old man, 14-year-old kid, running. We got to the checkpoint, and we ran in. And people went, you ran? And we went, yes. They went, was it hard? And we lied like dogs. I confess, we lied like dogs. Nah, it was easy, it was fine. I couldn't get out of the bath later. I go in the bath, I couldn't get out again. But I'll never forget that. That story, amongst others in this place, has shaped who I was as a minister, because God spoke to me about it afterwards and went, do you realise what he did? I spoke to Bob about it afterwards and said, I wouldn't have finished that if you hadn't done that. He said, when I shouted and shouted for you to keep up with me, I encouraged myself. True story. And but I think that's exactly what the Apostle Paul was doing when he was writing to the churches. Did you notice the very last line of that, on the wrong page, that line, he says, encourage each other with these words. He's speaking to a church about a situation that has been a problem for them. It's been a discouragement. They have been confused by some of the issues of theology. It happens, doesn't it? We get sort of puzzled by somebody's argument or somebody's sort of concept of God and Jesus and what's going on. And it confuses us and puzzles us. Well, that's what's happening in the church here. But that's what's happening in all the churches that Paul writes and Peter writes to and John. There are moments where they're discouraged and they're floundering and they just need somebody to come alongside them and say, come on, keep going. Don't you quit. Press on. I've lost my little notebook. Oh, very under that. Okay. Keep going. The Church of Thessalonica was a young church, and Paul had only spent a limited amount of time there because he was basically run out of town. They gathered a mob up, they said that he was preaching stuff that was contrary to their customs, and they ran him out of town. And so he only managed to spend a few weeks with the people of Thessalonica, teaching them, instructing them about what Christianity was, what they could expect, and what God was doing. So you know that Paul would have talked about the Lord's return. And one of the issues that they were struggling with was they thought that when people died and they buried them, that they would miss out on the second coming. And you can see how that would come about in the early church. And Paul writes to them and he says, don't be worried about this. God's got it. God's got it. But in his words, he's encouraging them to keep going in the faith walk, not to quit, not to give up. Is my first point. We've only just got to the first point. Weird happens. When we comfort, we encourage. When we encourage, we bring hope. Hope re-energizes us to continue the journey. Let me say that again. When we comfort, we encourage. When we encourage, we bring hope. Hope re-energizes us to continue the journey. Wherever we are in our Christian experience and our Christian walk, we so often need encouragement. I know I do. I mean, I preach in churches where, you know, I've been preaching my heart out and it's like it just bounces back. And you just think, oh boy, did I actually get through to anybody, Lord? Did we do a good job here? And sometimes, you know, you think, oh, you need somebody to come along like a white-haired old man come along and say, come on, keep going, young man. Don't you quit. Don't you give up. And we need to be that to each other. Because this time of being church is not easy. You know what? Well, we've got empty seats. We've got congregation, part of the congregation that are missing because, like I said in my prayer, they fell out of the habit of coming to church simply because of COVID and we weren't able to meet. And there's all sorts of situations. We watch people get old and some of our key workers are missing or whatever it is. And we can feel discouraged in church. And we need somebody to say, come on, we can do this. We can keep going. Don't quit. And God needs you and I to be that person or to be that to each other so that we don't give up. When we comfort, we encourage. And that's a great gift. And we need it in the church because these are difficult days to be a Christian. The world is pressing in with almost a silent persecution to stop us preaching that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to get to God. We live in what we call a pluralistic age. People don't want one way, they want multiple choice. They want to pick and mix. And they don't want people standing there and saying, there's only one way, and it's tight, but it's right. And so we can get discouraged by that. We can get discouraged by the hardness of preaching at this time. And we need the white-haired old guys or white-haired old ladies to come in and go, come on, don't quit. It is hard and you are aching and you do feel a bit battered and bruised, but keep going. And there's times when there's temptation all around us and it's easy to fall into sin. And we don't need somebody who's going to bounce on the trampoline and keep us down. We need somebody who's going to say, come on, get up again, walk with me. There's forgiveness available. When we comfort, we encourage. And encouragement is powerful because it brings hope. And what is hope? Well, faith is substance of things hoped for. It's all mixed in there. And hope and faith are powerful tools. There was a Christian rap artist. I know you all know about Christian rap. I can just see it. Who was part of a group called DC Talk back in the day. I think they're reforming, actually, on a cruise ship, of all things. I don't think I'll be allowed to go and see them. But Toby Mac wrote a song, and it was called What If I Stumble? And he says, what if I stumble? What if I fall? What if I lose my step and I make fools of us all? Will the love continue when the walk becomes a crawl? What if I stumble? What if I fall? What kind of church are we going to be? What kind of church are we going to be when people stumble and fall around us or get weary in the race? Are we going to be the kind that are still jumping up and down on the trampoline or putting people down? Are we going to be the kind of church that bends down, scoops them up and says, I don't know what happened there. I don't know how you missed the step, but I'm with you and I love you. Come on, stay with me, young man. What are we going to do? A few years ago, I was a minister in a town called Radstock. A bit like Woodstock, but not quite as musical. Which is out near Bath somewhere. And I joined the local gym. It's a really good thing if a minister joins the gym because you get to minister to people and keep fit at the same time. And I got to know people who went to the gym at the same time slot as I did. But more importantly, I got to know the staff of that gym. You know, you turn up in a dog collar and the kind of clothes I wear, then you're going to get noticed. And I got talking, I got to talk about my faith and everything else. And this young girl that was serving on the counter and sort of just taking people's money and providing drinks and stuff for them, got talking to me. She said, I used to go to church. Well, that's fantastic. I said, can I ask why you stopped? She said, well, I got pregnant. I said, oh, okay. And she said, the church weren't very helpful. In fact, they were really nasty about it. I said, I am so sorry. I said, it really upset me. It upsets me now just thinking about it. I said, I am so sorry we did that to you. She said, no, it wasn't your church. I said, what do you mean it wasn't my church? She said, it wasn't your church that did that. I said, no. I said, if Christians did that to you, then we're all one. I said, I did that to you. And I said, I apologize. Right now, we should never have done that. I said, what you did was a mistake, but life doesn't always go to plan. I said, but what we should have done is gathered up around you and loved you and helped you through and taught you what you needed to know. I've seen churches get young teenage girls that have got pregnant in, and some of the wiser ladies in the church have said, well, this is how you stick a nappy on. I've seen that happen. This is how you check a bottle of warm enough. This is how you bath a baby. I've seen that happen. It doesn't mean that we condone the sin. We just love the sinner. When we comfort, we encourage. When we encourage, we bring hope, and hope re-energizes us. We can do what God has called us to do because he has given us his Holy Spirit, and we can encourage each other. Here's my second point. Love is a fountain and not a drain. Now, that sounds like a weird thing to say, but this comes from this concept that some people are fountains, some people are drains. Have you come across that? Some people are fountains. They gush and they give, and they're constantly flowing over with something that is very, very refreshing. And some people are drains. They just want to suck in everything else. My wife has a phrase for such people. She calls them emotional hoovers. I kind of like that, but it doesn't stick in my head enough to use it. I like the phrase that some people are fountains and some people are drains. It's got a positive thing about it. And that's what God wants us to be. He doesn't want us just to be there taking. He wants us to be givers. Given, it'll be given back to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, placed in your lap. That's what Jesus said. Are you a fountain or a drain? The story of the prodigal son is really important here. Here's an image of a boy that basically wishes his father is dead. Let me have my inheritance now. I can't wait for you to die. I'll go off, spend it on wild living. He's being a drain. The older brother, when the younger brother comes back, is a drain. It's about him. Prodigal son, all about him. It says, when he was a long way off, the father saw him. That man had been waiting there day after day. He was a fountain. And the son comes with that speech, you know, I'm not worthy to be called your son. And the father doesn't even let him finish that little, you know, speech of humility. And he's going, get a ring for his finger, get a cloak for him, get shoes for his feet. He was dead, but yeah, the father's a fountain. And that's a picture of God in us. God is constantly giving, and everything he gives to us as well. And we're called to be in his image. Come on, young man, you can do this. We're supposed to be encouragers to each other. And that's what the Apostle Paul was doing in those scriptures and in this writing. He's saying, come on, don't quit. Don't let confusion take over. Don't let the weariness of the walk upset you. Don't let what you see happening to us upset you either. And when he wrote to the Corinthians, and he wrote to the Romans, and he wrote to the Philippians, and he wrote to Galatians, all of them, he's just writing letters and going, come on, we can do this. We can be church. We can do the love walk. We can see the kingdom of heaven extended in every direction. Here's my final point. Love compels us to keep going. He uses you and me to spur others on. Now, when I say that's my final point, that's just kind of a repeat of the points I've already made. Where are you in your experience of church? I mean, it may be that you need somebody to come alongside you now and say, come on, keep going. I've got you. You're with me. I'll walk with you. I'll run with you. Whatever you need. Maybe you're there and you just need to let somebody know. But actually, what you can do, if you're in the faith walk, you can be an encouragement. And your new minister, there's going to be times when he's going to go, Lord, these people you have given to me. How do I know that? Because I've done it. I've done it. I've been there and just go, oh, Lord, did I do something terrible that you punished me with these people? Well, Jesus said it. He went, how long must I suffer to be with you? Every minister has said that. And you're going to see it in his eyes. And he's going to need somebody to come along to him and go, come on, keep going. Don't you quit. The kingdom's at stake. I know what my ministry is. And sometimes it's hard. You know, you wait for doors to open and it's exhilarating. God's given me three things to do. I've never really shared with you what my ministry is about. God told me three things, to do three things. He told me to heal the hurting and the wounded in church, to care for those who have been hurt by church, to rekindle the old fires. You know, there's some people, they just they were on fire for God and they're full of the Holy Spirit, and then they let it fizzle down a little bit. God told me to go to them and rekindle those fires. I try to do that in churches that I go to. And he told me to plunder hell and populate heaven. Well, do the work of evangelists, but I kind of like plundering hell and populating heaven. But you know, I need you sometimes to get alongside me and shout, come on, young man. Young man, you can do this. You can fulfill God's call. You've got the Spirit. You've got everything you need. And you need me sometimes to do this. And you need to do it for each other. That is what Paul's saying. Encourage each other with these words. Comfort each other with these words. When the confusion comes, when the sin happens, when you falter in your step, what if I stumble, what if I fall? You need somebody. That's why we're together. God has called us to be like Bob, the white-haired old man, to a 14-year-old kid. He wouldn't let me quit. I'm not going to let you quit. Your minister won't let you quit. Don't let each other quit. It's too important. We've got a world to save, and it still needs saving. Amen.